Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's the Roundball Rock Podcast, starring Dave Schilling, Dan Issel, Bobby Jones, Joey Devine, Mac Calvin, Larry Brown, Sean Keane, Fatty Taylor, Paul Silas, R.I.P. Special guests, Queen Ozymandias, James Kirkland, Patreons, Kevin Farragan, thank you, Kevin, Morrisonic Podcast, thank you, Podcast, Sam Sulfagul, thank you, Sam. Musical guest, The Apples in Stereo. And now the temporary host of Roundball Rock, Joey Devine.
Hi, it's me, Joey Devine, your temporary host of the Roundball Rock podcast. And we are back with our season-ending episode. That's right, our national nightmare is over. Everything we hate so much, the games of basketball have ended, and now it's time to finally learn how much Ja Morant is being suspended.
Finally!
All anyone cares about. God forbid we have to watch an amazing game five.
Nope, we gotta know what Ja Morant is doing.
We gotta know how many empty cans of soda Zion's got.
Who's
in his
getting
bathroom.
Rizzed up?
Yeah, we gotta know who the Rizz King is. Who's?
What else do we have? Clutch Sports looking at?
Yeah. I do want to say this is technically an emergency podcast because I just want to congratulate NBA Hall of Famer, one of the 75 greatest players of all time, on finding out there's a website where he can get a girlfriend for a day. Paul Pierce, mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Over the one,
so this is my girlfriend for the day. They got a website that you can hire girlfriends for the day.
Stop, man.
And so I got a girlfriend. Stop.
Sean,
yes.
Is there a more perfect video than Paul Pierce not knowing what a live stream is and then admitting to hiring a hooker to Kevin Garnett while Kevin Garnett is like, hey, watch the game, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so this was a live stream of game three?
It was either two or three.
I think it was three because Denver had a big lead. Paul Pierce showed up. I'm going to say maybe not as sober mm-hmm. as Kevin Garnett was this. Did he realize he was supposed to be describing basketball for most of this?
No.
It kind of seemed like this is what happens when Paul Pierce shows up at your house. And often you don't know he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is the feeling of like, I know Kevin Garnett is doing a live stream making money for bet.us or
what was from Showtime.
Whatever. Well, it was for Showtime, but it was some gambling company's live stream. I think it's like house bet your house on these odds, you know. It felt like maybe Kevin Garnett had invited him to live stream a game like 2 weeks earlier, mm-hmm. and he just didn't even reply.
Yeah.
And then he just showed up at this one with
Camille.
The funniest thing about this is there's a clip where Camille's like, hey, I'm not a girlfriend for a day. I met you like a year ago, but probably still an escort, I think, or some. And it's like, maybe, and I was, and Kevin Garnett's almost like, hey, don't be mean to your prostitute.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no reason to do that. There's also a scene where he gets hit in the head with a lighter mm-hmm. after repeatedly asking if he can light a cigar, as Kevin Garnett just keeps saying, what are you talking about? No, you can't. We're in a studio. No, you can't smoke here. And then he begins smoking. He drinks about 8 gin and tonics
mm-hmm. yep.
During this. I mean, this is probably what it was like at Paul Pierce's Truth Hookah Lounge before that place tragically closed.
And then finally, he learns what a live stream is right at the end of the live stream.
Right at the end, he starts looking at the live stream on his own phone.
Uh-huh. And is blown away. We've been doing it?
two plus hours in.
After Kevin Garnett has told him, we are live, and pointed at the cameras.
Uh-huh.
100 times?
Maybe 100 times. And has been repeatedly just trying to get him to say anything at all about basketball and the game they're watching. It's also such a weird experience to see, because it's clearly supposed to be a second screen experience. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have that first screen, it's very weird. Kevin Garnett is a good friend.
Yeah. All right. Just wanted to talk about that real quick. But more importantly, the thing we have to talk about most, Sean, uh-huh. is, of course, your Denver Nuggets are NBA championships.
Our Denver Nuggets, America's Denver Nuggets.
To our friend David Borey. Congratulations to our friend Adam Mares.
Everybody at DNVR.
Yeah, congratulations to Andy Jewett.
Uh-huh.
No congratulations to Will Barton, unfortunately. I'm sorry, buddy.
Congratulations to Wilson Chandler, who seemed like legitimately touched by the victory, helped create the culture there the 12 years ago. Chandler. I mean, I was joking and said 12 years ago, he definitely got traded there 12 years ago.
Yeah.
I was mm-hmm. trying to exaggerate, and that's actually how long it was ago.
That's great. Love it. Love, congratulations to Mike Malone on not being fired. It really seemed like they were going to fire you at some point today, this year.
I gotta say, this isn't always going to work. It's not really my favorite thing, but congratulations to Mike Malone for taking a team that went 16-4 in the finals, mm-hmm. That had game tying shots in 2 of their 4 losses. And also was within 3 points with like 24 seconds left in another loss, to continually talking about how disrespected the Nuggets were and how no one believed in them, even as I believe they were maybe double-digit favorites by the end of the finals. But every press conference is like, you guys just want to talk about the Lakers. And it's like, it's game 4 of the finals. We don't, you just think because Rui Hachimura guarded, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Is that a shirt yet? It probably should be a shirt.
Sean, the first question I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Is what's funnier? The fact that DeAndre Jordan won a championship before Chris Paul, or the fact that Jeff Green won a championship before Russell Westbrook?
Oh my God. I think it's just barely Jeff Green. Because I think Chris Paul is like pretty legitimately happy for DeAndre Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's actually true.
I think you're giving Chris Paul too much credit, but okay, keep going.
But I think that Russell Westbrook is probably like more bummed about it. Whereas Chris Paul, as much as people are allegedly making fun of his daughter for him not winning a championship, I think he himself is kind of okay with it. I think it would have been different if he hadn't gotten to the finals, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I think it might be funniest that DeAndre Jordan somehow successfully chased a ring more effectively than Blake Griffin, who signed up with the Celtics.
And like the DeAndre Nets before then.
Like DeAndre Jordan on the Nuggets feels like logical and natural. Mm-hmm. Whereas like with Blake, it's like getting sad. Like it, I mean, it shouldn't be sad. Like, why can't he play for the Celtics? And yet, didn't it feel like
it was sad? Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't as sad on the Nets, but yeah, the Celtics, it was like, I don't know why that's, I don't know why that's more offensive to me, but it really did seem more like, yeah, it was just kind of a bummer.
All right, my.
But I mean, he needed to be close to Emerson College, stand up university.
Yeah, to major in comedy. My next question for you, Sean, is now that Ish Smith has won a championship.
Thank God.
Is he no longer going to wander the earth playing for every professional basketball team in the league? Or is this going to make him complete his goal for playing for all 30 teams faster?
Well, I mean, I think what's wild is that he, I think, has only played for one more team than Jeff Green. I'm not sure. I think he's played for 13 and Jeff Green's played for 12. I mean, there's definitely, even though it's not the main guys, there's very much a 2011 Mavs aspect to this team, mm-hmm. where all these guys are getting their first ring, where you're like, you look back at that Mavs team and you're like, you know, Jason Kidd gets his first ring and Dirk gets his first ring.
But Peja.
Then you're like, oh, Caron Butler got a ring? Like, yeah, Peja's the weird one. It's just a lot of guys. Brendan Haywood gets a ring. Like, it's really a lot of guys, basically. Yeah.
So Ish Smith has been on 13 teams, yeah.
I think Jeff Green's been on 12, but I think Jeff Green also has maybe been on certain teams more than once.
Well, we should have our friend Rob on to talk about that great Jeff Green article he wrote for The Ringer, where you can literally 6 degrees of Jeff Green, basically the history of the NBA through people he's played with, actually.
Well, and you know, I will say Jeff Green played in the finals, and when controversially Nikola Jokic got somewhat of a questionable fifth foul call, followed by somewhat of a borderline fourth foul call in game four. Mm-hmm. And Mike Malone not only did not challenge the call, I don't think he would have won the challenge, by the way, because while Bam Adebayo did flop, he also basically got fouled by Nikola Jokic's tree trunk legs. Anyway, it looked terrible because Bam like launched himself backwards. Anyway, Jeff Green stayed in the game for like 5 minutes and held things like they didn't really, the heat didn't catch up. And then Jeff Green hit a three.
Would also say, saying Jeff Green played for 12 teams is actually kind of fudging it a little bit, because 12 counts the Sonics and the Thunder as different teams. It's actually only 11, yeah. If you don't count. I mean, I guess the Sonics count, but it's still sort of like, because they're the same franchise, it's a little less impressive than Ish.
No, he's only been on 11 teams. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, Ish Smith, play for all 30. That's what we'd like.
He could do it. Key to the Washington Wizards trade. Exchanging Will Barton for Ish Smith. Executive of the year goes to Calvin Booth. Congratulations, Calvin Booth.
My next question, Sean, is Tim Connelly really upset with the decision he made this summer to go to Minnesota Timberwolves and then trade a billion first round picks for Rudy Gobert? And not just stay in Denver for one more year and win a championship.
I mean, yeah, I don't think he feels great about it. I'm gonna say that right now. I mean, he got a lot of money, but boy.
He has to take phone calls from A-Rod now.
Oh my God, A-Rod's is about going, and Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
Both those guys can call, and Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
They can call him whenever they want. Although, and then like he can also get called by Anthony Edwards, but I feel like that's
fun.
Both a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, wow.
You know, like I feel like he's probably like low maintenance, but high wackiness, you know,
yeah, but that's because good.
He's probably not calling with a problem, but he also might be just telling you a really audacious
crazy lie. Yeah,
that is fun, but probably he might be like a little tired sometimes. And
so Sean,
Anthony Edwards is like, you know, I can dunk on a 13-foot rim. And he's like, okay.
Here's a question.
You know,
for
I once raised a shark.
So this season is over.
Uh-huh.
Was this our first normal season since the pandemic, or are we still in weird zone? Because it feels like we're in a weird zone still.
I think this was a much funnier season than people have given credit for. Mm-hmm. That, like, some of the things that were seemingly scandalous were actually hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really weird season for sure.
Yes.
So you have an 8 seed. I mean, you had, this is the first year where in the second round you had seeds 1 through 8.
Yeah,
that's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
A 7 and an 8 were in the conference finals, and neither one was like necessarily that much of a fluke,
right?
And then what was really weird was that people were so worried about the Nuggets when, I don't know, they just sort of didn't have anything to play for.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I kind of think Nikola Jokic may have been sandbagging a little bit just because he was so sick of the MVP talk.
I think I don't he's really sick of everything. He didn't want to go to the parade.
Yeah, can we talk about some of the stuff from Nikola Jokic last night? I was laughing so hard. So first, they interview him after the game, and they're like, what does it mean to you to win the title? And he says, like, it gives a pretty thoughtful response about how, you know, basketball never goes the way you think it was. It's like a really low scoring game. The Nuggets shot like 19% mm-hmm. from three. And then he just says, I'm glad we won the game.
Yeah.
Like, there's a shot of him shaking up a bottle of champagne.
Mm-hmm. And you can't.
It looks like the
it.
Most obligatory yeah. thing. Well, he's doing it so slowly. Yeah. He's like sloshing champagne.
And then he gives up immediately.
He's yeah. wearing these crazy goggles. There's a picture of him looking completely stoic, drinking a Michelob Ultra.
Yeah, he looks like the meme of the guy standing alone in the corner of the party.
Well, and then they interview him, and there are two moments that are very human when they say, hey, you know, like, are you excited about, you know, the championship parade? And he says, like, looks off stage, he's like, oh, Lenny's parade?
Yeah.
And they tell him it's Thursday, and he just goes, oh, no. And he's just wiping yeah. his face. He's so miserable that he has to stay in America until Thursday. Granted, it's Monday night.
Well, it did come out why on yes. his NBA TV mm-hmm. interview, which is his horse has a big race on Sunday.
I mean, I get it, but he still can leave Thursday night.
Well, he's like, he's demanding that Josh Conkey gives him the private plane so he can get there in time.
I guess he wants to spend some time with the horse before yeah. the race. The other thing that is important to I feel like this isn't always made clear, because definitely Nikola Jokic is obsessed with horses. I thought that he was going to be totally stoic and then see like a police horse guarding the arena, and that would like make him cry. Mm-hmm. This isn't like the horse racing you think it is.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
It's harness racing, yeah. which is something that feels like just for gambling in like Long Island mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
That's the origin story of Bobby Axelrod from Billions. Mm-hmm. Is he learned how to analyze the trotters. Mm-hmm. And then he realized he could probably pick stocks after that. I don't know. Kevin Durant can explain that better than I can. But yeah, that's what he's into, is this form of horse racing that's all but extinct in America, except for like completely degenerate gamblers. And that is what he cares much, much more about than the NBA Finals. Then the other moment was someone asked him if this was like the greatest 2 days, or I think he just said it was the greatest era for Serbian sports, because Novak Djokovic broke the Grand Slam record the day before and won the French Open. He went to look at his phone to see if he had a text from Djokovic, and realized how many texts he got.
And he just said, oh no, I need to turn my phone off.
He looked just horrified. Like, oh no, everyone is going to congratulate me. No. Now, I will say, if you kept up with the clips, he started to loosen up and enjoy himself. I think maybe he got a couple ultras deep. He picked up Jamal Murray.
Well, I actually have a read on that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
I think he just doesn't like being a public figure. And he's very happy to hang out with his teammates. He's so happy for them, but he doesn't want to be, he doesn't want anyone filming him.
Well, and he is very polite. Like, he's not like ducking questions. He thanks the media, but he's private about that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So behind closed doors, he was, at one point, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was doing his, I think he maybe got a little sauced.
Sure.
Too.
Sure.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was wrapping up his press conference, and Jokic just emptied a beer on his head.
Yeah.
And then said, "You're done. You're done. Say goodbye." And I don't know if he was like, "I want you to hang out in the locker room," or if he was just like, "This is good joke." Because Djokovic is also, before he became like an anti-vax paragon thought leader, whatever.
Yeah, before he started considering joining LIV Tennis.
He has a recurring joke that he does for tennis reporters, where he tries to explain to them that the stitching of his racket is really important. And then when they look at the racket, he just bops them in the nose with his racket. Mm-hmm. And then every time just starts laughing deliriously and goes, "Classic joke of tennis." So he also threw Jamal Murray into the training pool. He didn't throw him in as much as he just jumped in with him and then made like a video coordinator do a cannonball. And then by the end of the celebration, he was still not mastering like spraying champagne, but he was getting good at dumping it on people.
Yeah.
Instead of just like sadly not hitting anyone. So great, great move for Jokic. He may or may not be at the parade. We'll see. It depends on how the horse is running.
Let him ride a horse in the parade.
There was also a great shot of Aaron Gordon still out like in
the streets,
shirtless, but wearing his jersey.
That one made me nervous, actually.
That's like, I don't know. It's Denver, man. It's like, it reminded me of Kevin Durant kind of being a little drunk and doing that in the Oakland Arena parking lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still a crowd, but like, also, what do we really think Aaron Gordon's doing in the offseason?
Well,
more dangerous stuff than that. This is Aaron Gordon, man. He's like, it's just a dryer foam party to him.
He just already broke his hand wrestling at one point. Like,
I just think that, like, given the typical Aaron Gordon offseason, this is actually a relatively controlled environment. Mm-hmm.
So my next question for you, and my final question, I think, is normally on these sorts of things, the players take the trophies around with them to special things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Jokic will take it to the racetrack in Serbia, probably.
Maybe.
My question is, do you think Michael Porter Jr. is going to take the trophy to visit Donald Trump in federal prison.
Oh, wow. I was going to say he might actually wager the Larry O'Brien trophy in like a game
against
a
12-year-old on NBA 2K.
Would it be 2K? It would probably just be 2K.
It was 2K.
I know, but I'm like, time. I was just trying to think, like, what do you think is the best video game to gamble with? I guess 2K is easy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, 2K. Trying to get like a teenager's graduation present versus a chance to like hold the Larry O'Brien trophy. But yeah, no, he's gonna be at Mar-a-Lago showing off the trophy. By the time it's Ish Smith's turn to take it, it'll be jammed with classified documents that were hidden in the butler's quarters or whatever.
All right, Sean, that's our NBA Finals talk. We actually have two non-finals related guests we want to talk to this week. The first is, there's a bit of a controversy right now surrounding the 76ers trying to build a new arena.
Speaking of Donald Trump fans.
Yeah, speaking of Donald Trump fans. So we had our friend Christina O'Donovan Zaveda on, you might know her as Queen Ozymandias. To talk about the protests she's leading against building the Sixers' new arena in Chinatown. Let's talk to her right now. We're here with Christine O'Donovan and Zaveda, or if you are a member of our Patreon/Discord, you might know her, or Twitter, you might know her as Queen Ozymandias, who is helping run the protest against the new Sixers arena. Christine, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. My voice is still recovering from the big rally we had this weekend, so I'm a little gravelly, but I'm happy to be here.
So first off, why don't you tell us and the listeners what the rally this weekend against the Sixers' new arena was about?
Yeah, so just like some background sometime last year, like late summer last year, the Sixers Development Corporation announced plans for a new arena that would be built on like the literal doorstep of Chinatown, like one block away from the historic like Chinatown Friendship Arch. Right now, all of the arenas in all of the like sports arenas in Philly are in this one massive complex in South Philly. The Sixers share an arena with the Flyers, but like all of the teams share this sort of complex.
Citizens Bank, Lincoln Financial, Xfinity Live. I don't actually know what that is, but I assume it's has infinite entertainment possibilities.
Absolutely. Okay. But yeah, so it's like just this whole big complex with like a bunch of parking. There is a streetcar that goes straight there. And the Sixers arena, they share it with the Flyers. They have had this plan for a while of building their own stadium so that the Sixers Dev Corp would like own it outright. They wouldn't have to share it with another team, and they would own the like space so that they would make the profit off of any like non-sports events that happen in the arena that like use the space.
For a city. You want as many different arenas that don't duplicate each other with the money going to a billionaire, ideally someone who funnels millions and millions of dollars to the GOP and Donald Trump specifically.
So you've heard of David Edelman and that crew. Yeah.
Well, actually, Josh Harris, we had a contest on Round Bell a couple of years ago to name the NBA's worst billionaire, and Josh Harris actually won.
Matt Crisman named it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Cool guy.
Yeah, he and the whole like ownership group for Sixers Dev Corp are like a really unique and impressive kind of evil.
Yeah.
So they announced the plans last year, and they seem to have thought that like people were just sort of going to take it. They didn't have any sort of like community plan. to like deal with the fallout from it. And so as soon as we heard that this was happening, we started putting together like community meetings, working with folks within Chinatown to sort of build like community resistance to this arena. So we've been doing this for, I mean, close to a year now, sort of building a consensus within the Chinatown community.
And when you do that, your first call is to Antifa headquarters, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. 1,000%. That's
you have a grant from George Soros.
Yeah, we have.
And you want to put a drag theater for preschoolers on that spot instead. Okay, okay.
Absolutely. Just,
I've been reading about this protest on Newsmax, and I think I have a pretty good handle on it.
Yeah. I mean, what we actually have is, like, pretty beautiful. Like, it's this truly, like, intergenerational movement of folks, not just in Chinatown, but across the city and, like, and also from even in from the suburbs, because like Chinatown in Philly is an incredibly important resource for Asian folks, like across this whole region. It's where a lot of people come to do their shopping. And it also has like a school there that was built from like the ground up by like people in Chinatown. And it's just like this incredible resource, and it's one of the only remaining Chinatowns like in the country.
I don't know. So there's a one block area in San Francisco. I don't know if you've been there, but you can definitely get some you can see a bunch of German tourists wearing I Heart San Francisco t-shirts there on the reg.
And actually, across the street is an Italian district. They basically split it down the middle. Your people, Christine, yeah. The Italians.
Yeah, absolutely. like, I mean, this actually exact thing happened also for DC's Chinatown with the Capitals Arena. And it is now one block in DC.
So you're saying Ted Leonsis, Mr. Fugazi. gentrified a neighborhood. I cannot believe it. I cannot believe it. He's the punk billionaire.
What we've been doing over the last like 8 or 9 months has been this sort of consensus building thing, making sure that we are like moving with the folks who actually like live and work in Chinatown. And then this past weekend, we just had a massive, massive rally and march through the streets of Chinatown and ending at City Hall, calling on like city council and folks in city government to do what they can to stop the arena, to like refuse to provide any funding, all of that classic stuff. And it was like legitimately one of the most beautiful things I've ever been a part of. Like we had
and you campaigned for Hillary.
God damn it. That is a true fact about my past. Yes. This was slightly more beautiful than organizing for Hillary Clinton.
Than being with her. All right. Yeah. Noted.
Well, I mean, look. This is
noted. Do you know Queen Ozymandias?
What do you say for? Is there? How would you say abuela in Mandarin?
Oh my god. Mm-hmm. We actually just say auntie.
I guess that makes sense.
But yeah, like it was. I mean, it was thousands and thousands of people. Like our rough count is like about 3,500 people. There was a point at which we had the entirety of Chinatown. It's like 5 blocks from the arch to Vine Street. And it was like entirely our protest. And we had partners from like other organizations. That's more of like my job, who like showed up for us really hard. Like we had faith leaders and organizations like Philly Thrive and Juntos and like these beautiful organizations that have been fighting their own battles against development and gentrification. And people turned out like even harder than I kind of expected. And we had like these like aunties who were doing like traditional like Chinese dancing at the top of it. We also had, do you guys know the band Les Cafeteros? They had a show in Philly that night, and they came early so that they could play at like the start of the march, which was pretty beautiful. And then
the gauntlet's been thrown, dead milkmen. You've got to play the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah.
Dr. And... Dog, I'm calling you out. Kurt Vile. I think those are the other Philadelphia bands I can name. Oh, Hall and Oates, Daryl Hall, John Oates. You got to come Rundgren, out.
Get yeah, out there.
Yeah. I'm just rooting for Lucy Dacus because she is from here. But yeah, it was real beautiful. And
I would call out Chase Utley, but I believe he lives in Sausalito for some reason.
Chase Utley tipped me 10% at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company one time. All right.
He loves
that seems like a lot for a baseball player, actually.
So I assume that, okay, so this is the same Josh Harris who, I'm checking my notes here, his subsidiary essentially bought a public hospital in Philadelphia cut all the services. Basically, it was Hahnemann Hospital in Philadelphia, which is not a hospital anymore, if that's correct.
Nope, it's just a big empty building.
Yep.
Because they apparently just wanted the real estate, but inconveniently there was a hospital there.
Correct.
They also, during COVID, tried to charge the city $1 million a month to put patients in there during the pandemic. So this is a civic-minded individual here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really good guy.
He is part of this sort of trio of dudes who are like really like cartoonishly evil. It's him. And then David Adelman is like a massive landlord in Philly and who has.
Ooh, I love landlords. Thing. That's why I like the band Waves. All right. Keep going.
I did sound for Waves once a long time ago and they were super rude. Anyway. Yeah. So Adelman, like his whole thing is he buys up, land around the universities in Philly and has like developed them and gouged rents and all that fun stuff. He also like gentrified the area around Howard University and all of the areas around University of Pennsylvania in West Philly, which is where I live.
It's also where Will Smith formerly lived.
It's true. There is like 5 blocks from my apartment, there's a giant mural of Will Smith. Just a fun fact. And then there, my favorite one is this guy, David Blitzer, who, if you guys have ever heard of the Blackstone Group, he was specifically, like, Blackstone was specifically called out for causing the global housing crisis. Like, which is really,
anytime you can name your business after, to make it sound like someone who would be trying to murder Jason Bourne, you have to do it, right? You just have to.
There's an amazing story about David Blitzer's father-in-law, who apparently tried to extort $11 million from him to just leave him alone. But the guy's big claim to fame is that he once owned the North American rights to the Smurfs.
Great.
Incredible. We're going up against Smurfs money. That's brutal. But yeah, they're like, I mean, the whole point of this is that this is a land grab. Like, they want to buy up this land so that they can drive up the prices for the land surrounding it and then buy that up and then just rip out all of Chinatown. Because Chinatown is like the only in Center City, Philadelphia, like downtown Philly, like Chinatown is the only community that's left that is still majority middle and low income. And so people have been trying to do this for a very long time. Like, our Philadelphia's Chinatown has existed for 150 years. It's basically, it goes on a clock of every 10 years or so, somebody tries to pull some shit like this. Starting in the 60s, the Vine Street Expressway, which is a highway that just bisects Chinatown. And it's a massive, like, 6-lane highway that causes an immense amount of pollution and also makes it really hard for people to just, like, get from one side of Chinatown to the other.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Classic. And then classic.
The Phillies tried to build a stadium in the 90s. They tried to build a federal prison also in the 90s in, I think, 2008.
That's just job creation right there. Yeah.
There was a casino. So, like, there's just been, like, this constant drumbeat by developers trying to take this, like, valuable land away from the community that is the ones who made it valuable.
Christine, and, like, I want you to know I respect you too much, but I almost started playing the Steve Ballmer developers, developers, developers drop there. But I like you too much, and this is too serious of a topic.
The thing is, this is what happens when there are no more cancer patients to evict for a different land deal. You have to go after, you know, middle to lower class homeowners who have their own communities. By the way, is there any irony in the Sixers destroying local hospitals and then hiring a coach named Nurse? My follow-up question, how is any team affiliated with Daryl Morey allowed to do anything near Chinatown?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. See, that's how you get, Christine, that's how you're going to get the other people on your side. You've got the left is going to be with you. You can get Enes Kanter to start tweeting about this long as he's confused into thinking that Chinatown is actually part of China.
Yeah.
To be like Philadelphia 76ers and Nike. How are you getting in bed with Chinatown?
Yeah.
And he's kind of dumb enough that he'd fall for it, I think.
I mean, I think that's like state representative Tarek Khan spoke on Saturday, and his whole thing was like, why are you not focused on, like, building up the team and, like, trying to get out of the second round?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I mean,
why are you spending money on this bullshit instead of, like, actually trying to make this team win something?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely, the old arena opened in 96.
Yeah.
So it's 27 years old, which for, like, a building, that's not really that old.
Yeah.
And it's the crazy thing is it's not even that they want the building. It's that they want
the land, the model. It.
Yeah. All the stuff, which in San Francisco has hilariously burned the professional sports teams who went hard on that. Although that one's less egregious just because they weren't like evicting people as much as they were just stealing like warehouse space and lofts and things. But the Warriors and Giants did not anticipate that no one would be going to offices anymore. And they're very clever land grab. I'm sure it'll pay off long term, and there's some kind of like, sure, they're making tons of money on the taxes, but it is kind of funny to see that the Giants are like opening this big Visa tower, and Visa's like, we actually haven't done return to office yet. Is that going to be an issue? We don't really need 33 floors or any floors anymore. Is that
so, Christine? What can our listeners in the Philadelphia area do to help fight this? To help fight these particular billionaires,
these
or billionaires in general?
If you are in Philly, if you go to apipa.vote/Chinatown, there is a petition that we're continuing to collect signatures on, targeting city council and the future mayor, to just get them to pull whatever levers they have. We are also asking folks to put up, like, we have these, like, no arena in the heart of our city like signs. So we're asking folks to put stuff like visibly up in their windows. And if you want to do that, just DM me on Twitter and I will bring you a sign.
And can our listeners not in the Philadelphia area sign that petition?
I mean, you can. It just means you'll get emails from us. But like the biggest thing is, and like the reason I'm excited to be on this podcast is like I think we have done a good job of like getting people aware of the situation, but less so in like the general sort of basketball world. Mm-hmm. Though we did just Clutch Points did just do a story on us, mm-hmm. which is cool.
How was the Photoshop?
It was, they didn't do anything cute. I'm like kind of annoyed about it, but it was a genuinely good art, like shockingly good article. For
I'm actually a little bit afraid of what the art might have been, to be honest. Yeah. So that's probably
but yeah, I think just like sharing this and like talking about it and making it, because like the problem that we're facing is that like the city, they're not asking the city outright for funding. The city will have to spend a shit ton of money on this, no matter what.
They're not the Oakland A's.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They're not going for public funding. And so what we are trying to do is trying to make it as clear as possible that doing this would be toxic for them, and making it just a PR nightmare. I will say that since Saturday, the Sixers have still yet to say anything. Like they have not had a response to the rally, which is pretty... feels good.
Yeah, they linked to like a PDF on their website.
Wow, but Daryl,
that was the PR response.
So you're telling me Daryl Morey has not tweeted about this yet? I bet he hasn't seen it. He's never on Twitter.
I think the one thing that I saw anybody say was Edelman was like, not one person will be displaced. And then somebody asked about like specific people that like specific buildings that they were going to evict people from. And he was like, we are in conversations to talk about relocation. Oh. It's just like, oh, you fucking piece of shit. But like, yeah, we're trying to win this and in nationally in the world of PR and like making it so that when people think about the Sixers, like this is top of mind for them. So like sharing this stuff, truly, there are some really beautiful pictures from this weekend. Like continuing to share that stuff and just like talking about it, mm-hmm. Is really valuable. But if you're in Philly, DM me, mm-hmm. and I can also hook you into to some of the other stuff that we're doing.
And see if you can trick Joel Embiid into thinking that Rihanna said she'll go on a date with him if mm-hmm. they move their arena. That I think that would work.
Joel has put pressure on Josh Harris before, like when mm-hmm. he cut when he wanted to cut people's wages during the pandemic. Joel like embarrassed him into paying it. So, you know, but yeah, we're not out here trying to hate on the Sixers, the basketball team, no. just like
yeah.
their ownership.
But maybe we should tell him that we should tell Philly fans that Nikola Jokic really supports that stadium.
Yeah.
There has been a good amount actually of like Philly sports, like dirtbags being like, I don't want to try to park in Center City. Like,
yeah, I mean, that
like, it, fan bus that I get on, and like, that's, you know, I have my traditions and whatever, which is like, I appreciate that mm-hmm. solidarity.
Well, just tell them that it's hard to buy batteries there, and they won't attend the game. They won't want to go to the games.
That was like 50 years ago, and that was the Eagles. Come on,
you know, I'm just saying, okay. It's filled.
The A's have thrown batteries more recently. Oh, it's close. It's close.
Yeah, they definitely.
I think JD Drew got batteries thrown at him in '99, and the A's took it to another level because. They threw batteries at an ambulance carrying Johnny Damon off the field after he suffered a concussion. He had been on their team the year before, 2 years before.
They also, the A's fans, I remember when Ichiro first, it was his rookie year, when he first came there, he showed reporters after the game that he had 76 cents and a battery that people had thrown at him. He'd collected the change that people were throwing at him. All right. The link to this, to Christine's petition is in the description of this episode. Thank you so much for coming on, Christine.
Yeah. As always,
we here at Roundball Rock are anti-owners. We're anti-billionaires. So we don't want them to do anything that they want to do. So please.
Yeah, even if it wasn't displacing people and an evil cash grab, I would just fundamentally not like it if Josh Harris
got
and,
what he wanted. Yeah.
Mr. Blitzer yeah. were involved. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, thank you guys so much.
You know, also Josh Harris recently bought the Washington Commanders, which is something that a right wing Reddit troll would do, trying to own the commies. There we go.
All right, Sean. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Christine. Sign that petition, everyone. It's in the description of this link, in the link of this episode. And stop gentrifying shit, dude. All right. And finally, Sean, there's a new 30 for 30 out about Bill Walton. It's 4 episodes long. And we decided we needed to talk very briefly about it with America's foremost Bill Walton expert. The author of the Bill Walton series of mysteries, which you can buy on Amazon. Here we are talking to James Kirkland about the new Bill Walton 30 for 30. Look, there's a new 30 for 30 out about Bill Walton, and there's only one expert we know about Bill Walton. That's right, it's the author of the Bill Walton mysteries himself, James Kirkland, calling in from Harlem, New York, which is something Bill Walton would appreciate. James, how you doing?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic, lads. I'm here in the spiritual center where basketball was born. Spiritually speaking, of course, Dr. Naismith, his soul resided in Harlem before he even built the peach baskets and put them on the wall. Let's go one time. I won't do 100% Walton impression, but guys, I am so excited to talk about this documentary. It's the greatest. It is the greatest documentary, I think, of all time. This 30 for 30, The Luckiest Man Alive.
I was reading about it and how there was so much stuff. They originally wanted it to be a two-parter. It's a four-parter. And they told Walton that, and Walton was just like, why not six?
Yeah. Well, you know, when he was writing his autobiography, Long Strange Trip, I believe it's called, the first draft came in at over a million words. It was like it was longer than War and Peace. And it's like, editor was like, Bill, we got to cut down. He's like, why? I'm just getting started. There's so much more to say. The job of editing Walton is not one that I envy.
It's amazing because I read Back from the Dead, which, you know, it talks about his back surgery and everything, too. And one of the reasons that it goes that long is that every 3 sentences is just like a Dead lyric, a Dylan lyric, you know, like any Moby Grape lyrics just in the middle of the sentence. And then you're like, oh, that's what you hear in your brain. That's how Bill Walton thinks.
Yes, it's shuffle. It's always shuffling. The shuffle knows. The shuffle grows. It's giving you what it needs, what you need in the moment. Yeah, he literally is just like going to like getting like a bowl of cereal, then I'll be like, oh, the fields of barley, Neil Young, one way home, kids, Canada, where am I? Joni Mitchell, I love you, you legend, please. Lionel Hollins, my good friend, I should call him. Can you imagine being friends with Walton and just getting these calls from time to time? And he'd be like, if you're Lionel Hollins, you gotta be like, Bill, you know, can we just have like a once a week? We don't need an every day. We don't need an every day check-in.
It's like I'm at Dick's Picks volume 38, and he's like, no, you've got to hear 42.
You're ready. You're almost ready. The outlet pass. Know what it is to know what basketball grows. Djokovic, we know you. Thank you, Serbia. So much passion, Arvidas Sabonis. Let's go.
Did you guys think it was strange? Not to get straight into the documentary here.
No,
but did
get
you think
straight
it was
in.
Strange that about midway through the first episode, they introduced his second wife and all his children, but never once have talked about his first wife, who he had the children with.
Yeah, I don't think he talks about her very much. Something happened, something with that. And there is that moment in the second one where he's like, you know, if Bill doesn't want to talk about something, he just won't talk about it. And credit to the filmmaker for getting him to talk about like the Sibian Liberation Army stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not, he is a pretty, he's pretty closed door. He literally wouldn't talk about it. And the documentary maker handed him a laptop and said, could you just look at what you wrote? He's like, yeah, it looks like what I wrote. That sounds like me. And I'm like, obviously it sounds like you, Bill. You wrote it. Your editorial. What are you talking about? he really doesn't even, I mean, that's why he doesn't even, I mean, the books that I wrote where he solves mysteries with Dave Pasch during the Pac-12 tournament, I mean, I know he knows that what they are. I've talked to his agent, and what I heard back from his agent was that, yeah, Bill doesn't read what he doesn't want to read. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, you know, it's about him, right? If someone wrote a mystery novel where you solve mysteries, would you not be somewhat curious about the content of that novel? No, not Bill. Not interested. I want to reread the album art of The Grateful Dead's Greatest Hits again. That's what I want to do. And find out new things about that. That's just how he is.
I knew there was going to be a lot of UCLA hagiography in this, but it was even more than I was expecting, I gotta say, so far. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we could have used some more. Maybe they could have walked us through John Wooden's pyramid more in depth.
Well, I will say it's the insights about where they show those interviews of Wooden, and Wooden's kind of talking trash.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking trash to Bill, and he's talking trash to everyone. I'm like, holy shit, this John Wooden was really that dude. He really would not take gruff from anybody. Bill missed one shot in the national championship game, and every time he talked to Walton about it, he mentioned it for the next 38 years. Like, this guy did not forgive and forget. It's just kind of amazing.
It's weird because I feel like I hadn't seen very much footage of John Wooden. Like, I feel like I've read a lot about him, but like, I don't know if it's the nature of television or the footage. So that was very novel to me. And honestly, I haven't even seen that much footage of Walton playing, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
No. And even Luke talks about that, where he was like, yeah, we had no idea our dad was good at basketball. We knew he was big.
Yeah,
he was crazy, but we had no clue he was actually good. And then somebody turned up with the point guard, the one point guard who if he would have lied about smoking weed, UCLA would have gone undefeated in 4 years. They never would have lost.
Yeah, well, you're not allowed to lie. Pyramid says no lying, so you're not allowed to lie.
He was trapped by the pyramid.
If an old man asks you if you smoke weed every day, you say yes. That's what the pyramid says to do.
Do you think Bill Walton has smoked weed in an actual pyramid?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you not see the footage of him in Egypt? 100%. Absolutely. I was inside the Sphinx with Bobby Weir, and we lit up a huge doob, and we saw things I never thought I'd ever see again. Set Ra, the entire pantheon of the Egyptian gods came down and visited me, and Jerry was there with his briefcase, and we had so much. It all rolled into one. Everything. Nefertiti. Tutankhamun, all my friends were there. Maurice Lucas, everything was happening.
So I would recommend, they also produced like a companion piece, like a behind the scenes to this, which is very simple. It's just Dave Pasch on a Zoom call. And the people he's talking to are Lenny Wilkins, Danny Ainge, and Mickey Hart, drummer for the Grateful Dead. And there
could have less in common.
you're not going to believe this, but Danny Ainge did not take Bill Walton up on taking him to a Grateful Dead concert. But apparently,
and how can he respect him for that? At the end of the day, that's when he lost respect for Danny Ainge and the entire Celtics organization. Why? Why would you not? This is very similar to the story that he told on air one time. I was watching some random Pac-12 game between like Washington State and Oregon, and Walton's just going on a rant. Like he was like passionately, so you really seem to not like me today, Bill. What's going on? He's like, well, I don't respect you. And Patrick's like, what do you mean you don't respect me? He's like, I offered you tickets to see Fish on New Year's Eve, Madison Square Garden. You turned it down. How can I respect a man who would do that? Like, that was the deal breaker.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand. Well,
Pash explains that they all have noticed that Walton is apparently so competitive that in non-competitive situations, he tries to set up an adversary. And so often when he's announcing, it's like the referees, but sometimes it's just Dave.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
He has to compete with Dave during the telecast. And Dave's like, I don't always know how to deal with that. Like, we're partners on the broadcast, but he also wants to beat me in the telecast.
Yes, it is. Each word we say is a point, and I will have more words than you at the end of the game. I guarantee it. If the referees don't get in the way, the zebras are trying to hold us back. I won't let it happen. I won't let it. They're just like the cops who arrested me in UCLA. I'm standing up against the injustices in Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam. No, these referees. No, I'm swimming past it into the cosmos. Pass. I win. You lose.
The other thing that came out is I guess he just has unstoppable confidence in every area. And when he was on the Celtics, he used to play computer chess all the time. And he would talk to his teammates about like what was happening between Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky, and just would talk about chess all the time. And then Ainge played him once and like beat him easily, even though he didn't really play chess. And he just liked to talk about chess. He wasn't actually good at it, but he like knew a lot of names.
That's one of his whole things. Just like, he's just complete phone book of names of everyone he's ever heard of or mentioned before. Boris Kasparov. Yeah, look at Bobby Fischer. Oh, my good friends. Ronald Reagan. No, thank you. No, thank you, El Salvador. We're turning back the time. No, the clock goes on.
Yeah, he's not unlike Dennis Miller in that way.
Like, are you just saying these words?
Gary Porter, babe. Okay, talking about point guard Jerome Kersey. Okay,
I gotta say my favorite part of I've watched the first two episodes of the documentary is when Kareem talks about how he came to visit him when he played the Lakers and he wasn't wearing any underwear, and Kareem is still disgusted by the memory to this day.
Viscerally, just absolutely.
Like, I've never seen the look of just hatred on someone talking about something pretty innocuous that happened.
Utter disgust.
70 years
Absolute
ago.
Utter disgust.
Yeah, he hated it.
Really, two people who are so different: Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton. If they weren't 7 feet tall, they would, and went to UCLA, both played center, they would literally, I don't know if they would have ever met. I mean, there's not the Venn diagram.
Yeah.
It's like complete, but also completely different. And the fact that they're like good buds somehow still, yeah, it really makes me happy. I mean, I don't know who, my favorite part of the doc so far, I've only seen the first two as well, but just like his kids and his kids being like, oh no. No, no, he's like that all the time.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No. You think that he's turning it off and he's turning it on. Oh, no, no, no.
Well, and like, then they show a clip him, like, of them at dinner, and he's during like the 98 finals or the 96 finals, and he's like, Greg Ostertag is the greatest center of all time.
Well, that has my favorite Walton broadcast moment of all time, where they take out the great Greg Ostertag. And they bring in a disappointing high pick, Chris Morris. And Chris Morris goes to check in at the scorer's table, which is maybe 3 feet away from where Bill is sitting, announcing the game. And he just starts going, "Oh, no. Oh, no. What are they doing? Chris Morris is a terrible player." He's just shouting it into Chris Morris's ear, basically. And you see him, he kind of runs onto the court kind of sheepishly, like, I Greg's tired. Mm-hmm.
Jerry Sloan,
he's in foul trouble. Doing? I don't know.
Jerry Sloan, you're ashamed of the name Jerry, the great Jerry. You should be ashamed, sir. What are you doing? Put in Antoine Carr, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Why? What are you doing? Byron Russell, thank you. Thank you for my life.
So the other most insane thing that I learned from this extra bit of business is that Mickey Hart once insisted that he needed to know how good Larry Bird was. And Mickey Hart, kind of like a few guys in the Dead, is actually pretty devoted to fitness, although he does also smoke weed all day, every day. Mm-hmm. But Mickey Hart also like goes to the gym and plays basketball all the time. So he was like talking trash, and Bill Walton set up a one-on-one game between Larry Bird and Mickey Hart. And Larry Bird apparently played so hard against him that Mickey Hart almost started to cry. And at one point dribbled through Mickey Hart's legs while Mickey Hart just stood there.
I mean, Mickey, how high do you have to be to think you have a chance against Larry Legend? You're on the Dead. How many tabs of that good acid are you taking to be like, I think I can take him, man. I think I can. This guy doesn't really have it. He's only 6'10 and won three three-point contests in a row. I think I can hit this guy. No problem.
Mickey Hart weighs about 140 pounds.
Yeah, but the audacity of Mickey Hart to even think that he could for a second. But it is pretty cool to think about like the Dead in basketball. I know he's a huge Warriors fan, but like, the Lithuania national team, and I hope they get to that. Hopefully that'll be part four. But just like how they completely saved the Lithuanian national team going to the Olympics during the Dream Team, and was the second best team against the Dream Team. And those jerseys, oh, iconic.
Well, that's because they had the GOAT Don Nelson coaching them.
Well, they had
absolutely smoked weed with Bill. Who absolutely smokes weed with Bill Walton in my novels.
That's why I brought it up. That's it. We're on the
mountain. Careful, readers, now.
The other the one last thing I want, I brought up Kareem but didn't get to it. But have you considered? Because Kareem is the ultimate mystery writer now. He only cares about writing Sherlock Holmes' brother's stories and Veronica Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Have you considered for a third book a Walton-Kareem team-up?
You know what? That's another guy who absolutely would hate to be in a novel that I wrote. So you know what? I am now, because that would be just to piss those guys off.
Yeah,
having them, and I think that he kind of does. I think he would be a great guy to serve as a bit of the Mylar. What's Sherlock's brother again?
Not Myron. Minecraft. Yeah. Minecraft.
Minecraft. Perfect Minecraft home to Bill. And so thank you for that suggestion.
Hey, no problem.
I really would like you to get in a literary feud with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That would be completely incredible.
That would be a dream. Let's start it right here while I'm in his hometown.
New York City,
let's go. Kareem, I'm calling you out one-on-one. Mickey Hart says I can take you, and I believe him.
Well, I think that's all we need you for, James. Why don't you tell our listeners once again where they can buy the Bill Walton mysteries?
Oh, thank you. Thank you, boys. It's available now for purchase on a little mom and pop bookstore website known as Amazon.com.
Oh, nice.
It's also available on
Audible.
Wow,
was that hard to get on?
It was. There were a lot of hoops. I had to pull a lot of strings. Fortunately, I know some people in the Sibian Liberation Army, and they were able to get me, Fatty Hurst, get me in there. You can also, it's on Audible. In fact, the first one is available on YouTube, read by yours truly, if you want to get a little taste of the Bill Walton mystery.
Love it.
Book one, Friend of the Devil.
And it did, which appeared on Ted Lasso season 3 as well.
That's true. That was a really cool thing. I had no idea that was going to happen. Coach Beard reading the Bill Walton mysteries on the desk. And I didn't know that Brendan Hunt, who plays Coach Beard, is something of an Oprah in the literary circle. There's like a huge following of podcasts and book groups who follow what Coach Beard reads. So we've had a big bump in sales since the Coach Beard read, and that's been very cool.
That is the weirdest information I've ever learned in my entire life.
Well, and a spoiler for my dad, who may or may not listen to this podcast, but get excited for your Father's Day gift. That's all I'm going to say.
It's the perfect Father's Day gift for dads and grads alike. Pick it up, the Bill Walton mysteries.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate you talking to me, and love your work. And hey, go basketball. And go
I have one final question. I'm sorry you just wrapped up well, but yeah. what should the Portland Trailblazers do with the number 3 pick?
There's a couple of people. There's two strategies, right? Either you trade the pick to satisfy Dame in the win now Dame window, mm-hmm. or you know you keep the pick, you go with Scooter, and you build with him for the next 9 years. Or the third option, I guess, is like you get Scooter, and then you try to like convince Dame that he's really good. Maybe you guys will be best friends, and yeah. It'll all work out. I'm hearing a couple rumors today about the New Orleans mm-hmm. franchise looking maybe to offload perhaps Brandon Ingram. I would do BI and the other left-handed kid there.
CJ McCollum.
Yeah, I would. Let's get that young kid CJ McCollum. I want to see if he could work with Dame. I think that backcourt hasn't been tried enough. Maybe one more go round. No, Herb Jones is what I was thinking of. Herb Jones, I would definitely do. I would do Brandon Ingram and Herb Jones for the 3 and Simons for sure. I think that would be great. But the real problem in Portland is that we got an ownership group that doesn't like basketball. Mm-hmm. And refuses to sell to Phil Knight, who desperately wants to buy the Blazers, mm-hmm. and he would make everything okay. If mm-hmm. Phil Knight bought the Blazers, I'm confident that we would be a championship contender for years to come. But right now we have Paul
Allen's
sister.
He certainly cares much less about stealing bones. I don't know if you know that story about Jody Allen.
Wait. I know that she was sexually harassing her bodyguard.
She did do that.
She was doing that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But no, in that lawsuit, it came out. Go ahead,
rare animal bones?
Yes. She was stealing rare animal bones from Antarctica, I believe.
Yeah, there were penguin skeletons. And it's an insane story, but yes.
She's the worst. She's literally the worst. It's under the radar because she doesn't make any public appearances or anything like that, but she probably is one of the worst owners in sports.
Yeah.
It's like she's got to go. And because of that, like, you know, our GM situation's in flux, everything's in flux, like Dame's in, like the whole thing is just like, so because of that, I have no confidence in the ownership group or our GM to make the right calls or make the right picks. So my gut feeling is like, stick with Dame. He's been loyal to us. Let's be loyal to him. Let's just try to win, you know, for the next couple of years, win now mode. And then, once Jody gets sick of her toys and does the Toy Story meme of being like, I don't want to play with you anymore and throws the Blazers away. Let's get Phil in there and then let's ride it out for the next 100 years. Yeah. A Blazers dynasty, my team, the pinwheel, 5 teams playing together, swirling together like the universe, the Milky Way, Lionel Hollins, Dave Twardzik, I love you, let's go, John Mayer, He's channeling Jerry. You gotta see him. I love you, John.
All right. Thanks, James. Get the Bill Walton mysteries now.
Get Hornacek. Where are you? Greatest shooting guard ever.
All right. Thank you, James. Thank you, Christine. Buy the Bill Walton mysteries. Sign that petition so Josh Harris doesn't get to kick out a bunch of old people from Chinatown. And that's our episode. Sean, we'll be back next week with our annual Bust Names episode before the draft.
Very exciting.
Should be exciting.
I'm going to be in New Orleans this next week, and this is weird. I'm supposed to look for a condo for Scoot Henderson. Huh, I don't really understand what that is about, but
that's weird.
You know,
I'm going to New Orleans and I'm supposed to evict Mariah Mills.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a cop now.
Weird. Anyway, and as per New Orleans tradition, I am going to leave a bunch of empty soda cans in my bathroom. So it should be fun. I'm hoping to meet Jose Alvarado and not get pickpocketed by him. And if I say Gail Benson, I'm going to point to her and say, hey, not cool. I mean, is that the coolest thing I can say to her? I think so.
Sean, is there a song you wanted to play to have us here to end the season?
Yeah, did we played the Jokic song?
Yeah, we played that last week.
Right?
Yeah,
you know what we should play? The Jamal Murray song. This is, I feel like this was a coronation of Nikola Jokic, but this win, I feel like the Jokic title felt more inevitable, whereas the Jamal Murray story is really inspiring. Not that the rest of the Nuggets weren't great. It's like, it's nice for Aaron Gordon too, but Jamal Murray like really came back, hardworking dude, even played a lot of good defense. And so we have a song about his hometown called Waterloo Kitchener, and it's a kink song.
And then as for me, you can always follow me on Twitter at Frankie Muniz. We're on 6/4/23. I tweeted, I really haven't slept in a week. Good season, Sean. Love you very much. Trust the process.
Trust the process.
And shut it down. Let's all get really into learning who the new children are coming into the league.
Red River Valley, St. Lawrence Lowlands, on the Haldimand track. Near Wilmot Township, Mennonite settlements, and Grand Trunk Railway tracks. And Jamal Murray's from there. And when he goes back to Waterloo, he is in paradise. Every day I'm confused by the radio patterned roadways. Every street it kicks me across three times. Waterloo Kitchener's fine.
Waterloo Kitchener's fine.
Jamal needs Scott Stephens, Hall of Fame defenseman, at center in the square. They're seeing the symphony because of Rafi, Armenian theater's there. And they love the acoustics as long as they're hanging in water. Things will be hella sick. Every day I appreciate you leave and play Tannery. Digital media companies are inside. But Waterloo Kitchener's fine.
Waterloo Kitchener's fine.
Half a million people live in the Tri-Cities where they filmed Away From Her. Home of Lennox Lewis, Conestoga students, and the But if Jamal's playing, watch her the Kitchener. We'll root for him cause they're nice. And when he goes back to watch her the Kitchener, he is in paradise.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.